to the sports sermon. We are going to put ourselves through hell today talking to Kevin. We're going to talk about the Super Bowl, and I'm joined today by a couple great guests, one very bad guest. First off, I want to introduce Editor-in-Chief Graham Pirro.
I hate Bill Belichick.
We've got also Executive Opinion Editor Kevin Huggard.
I just want to know, I'm going to put the over-under on how many times I say the phrase greatest of all time at 15 for this podcast.
Oh, man. And we also have Assistant Halftime Sports Editor Parker Houston.
And I'll take the over, Kevin.
That's smart money right there.
What a Super Bowl. I mean, you know, you can't ask for a game more entertaining than that. The incredible comeback. The final score was Patriots 34, Falcons 28. It was the first overtime Super Bowl ever. It was also the largest deficit ever overcome in a Super Bowl. The previous was 10 points. The Patriots actually came back from a 25-point deficit. The Falcons had a 28-3 lead with 8 minutes and 31 seconds remaining in the third quarter. And the Patriots responded with 31 unanswered points. Kevin smirking.
I don't know whether to laugh or to cry for joy. It's insane.
So let's go through the game because, you know, I think there were a lot of really interesting and some really crazy things that happened in this game. First off, you know, it was scoreless through the entire first quarter and through part of the second quarter, which was kind of unbelievable, especially considering how prolific these two offenses were. What did you guys think of, you know, the first quarter? And, I mean, the defense really shined out there.
Yeah, so the Patriots, I think every single one of their Super Bowl appearances have not scored in the first quarter. Mm-hmm. So this wasn't that uncharacteristic for them in this type of game. Having said that, I expected it to be different this time, just because the Falcons are such a high-powered offense. And also, I figured that scoring first and scoring early would be so important. Oh, man.
Scoring first did not end up being important.
It didn't end up mattering all that much. But, you know, Brady missed a couple throws early on, didn't look great. The Falcons looked okay, a little bit better, I think. But, no, it wasn't anything special early on.
Well, I think the key in the first half was the fact that the Falcons were able to get in Brady's face with a four-man rush, which is the key to beating him. And I think early on, Matt Ryan just did not look comfortable. He looked really nervous, which was understandable. It's his first Super Bowl. Cut him some slack. I think the key for the defense, at least, was the fact that they were energetic, they were playing fast, they were playing up-tempo with the Patriots. And over time, they just got tired.
The Falcons were really running the ball well, though, in the first half. I'm surprised that they didn't at least march it down somewhere near the red zone and get a field goal or something like that.
They had some great outside runs there.
They did, really. Yeah. They were running that right side sweep, and it was probably their best. I mean, if they would have kept running that, they might have won. The uncharacteristic pick from Brady was just, like, I was shocked when I saw that.
It was such a bad throw.
It was a bad throw.
It was a terrible decision.
I don't think I've, like, as someone who's been watching Tom Brady for years, like, I was like, at that point, oh, he's losing it, which I've said multiple times, literally always been wrong, and I was wrong that time, too.
Yeah, and then, so then I think the first five or six drives went without a score, and then that fumble by the Patriots, I think it was LeGarrette Blount who lost the ball.
Yeah, Blount fumble.
And, you know, it was pretty deep in Atlanta territory. I think they were in field goal range, right?
I think they were on the 25 or 30.
And, Atlanta got it back, and they went on a five-play, 71-yard drive to score the first touchdown of the game with 12 minutes and 15 seconds remaining in the first half. And then they just started pouring it on. They stopped the Patriots on the next drive, who punted, and then the Falcons went on a 62-yard touchdown drive, and then the next drive was that pick six. And, you know, within 10 minutes, it was a 21-0 lead for the Falcons. Mm-hmm. Kevin, how are you feeling at that point?
Is this what we're going to do?
If we're going to spend this podcast running through my emotional state during the game, I would love that. At this point, I'm watching Robert Alford just kind of dance on, like, the set. From, like, the 15 in, really. He just kind of, like, walked, which was really, really hard. And then you saw the replay from behind the offensive line. And you know, I don't know what Brady was looking at, but that was a terrible read. But at this point, this was around the time that I was watching it in my apartment with a bunch of friends. This is around the time that I escaped from the living room, which was a little bit hostile towards the Patriots. And I went into the kitchen and started furiously washing dishes for about the next 5 to 10 minutes. That was my emotional state at that point. I was having a near existential crisis.
Hey, you washing the dishes might have swung the game, to be honest.
Yeah, honestly?
Yeah.
The swing didn't come until, a quarter and a half later, unfortunately. But
it has a delayed effect, I've heard.
Hey, clean dishes. They can't do harm. Can't hurt. But, yeah.
Yeah, what did you guys think of, that stretch for the Falcons?
I mean, I think the Falcons remembered that they had the best offense in the league and started throwing the ball down the field. And I think they did a good job of softening up the Patriots early, running the ball. But most of all, they came up with the approach on defense, the bend but don't break approach, let the Patriots get yardage but stop them when it counted. And early on it worked really well because the fumble was in Falcons territory and the pick six was also in their territory. So I think early on they had a good approach, which was bend but don't break, give up yards, but create turnovers when you have opportunities, and they trap Brady into an interception. Yeah. So I think the first half was a really, really well-played half for the Falcons, and the Patriots just looked off.
Yeah, the Falcons' pass rush in the entire first half, not just really the first quarter, was incredible. The Patriots generally have either the best or the second-best offensive line in the league, and it just wasn't showing on Sunday. They gave up a couple of those where there was – the Falcons would run this – they would run two guys at the same gap, and the Patriots didn't know how to handle it. The running backs weren't blocking. The Pats ran a lot of five out, and that didn't really work well because they didn't have backs back there.
The right guard, Shaq Mason, got embarrassed a couple times. By Grady Jarrett.
Yeah.
The first sack, Jarrett came in off the left end, and he just pushed him back into Brady.
Yeah,
and you see like a 300-pound man get thrown, and you're just like, oh, man,
wow.
That's something else.
I'm glad Matt Ryan, I was glad at the time because now it didn't work out, but Matt Ryan finally later in that second half sort of got his bearings about him and started actually, throwing it up to guys like Julio, throwing it down the field. The way the Falcons ran the ball in the first quarter, the Pats had to stack the box. And there was a couple plays where Julio was one-on-one and you were just looking at Belichick like, what are you doing? Like, he's going to get a 20-yard catch every time.
Yeah. No, they definitely had a lot of the deep seam throws open in that second quarter. The third quarter, really, too.
I think the first drive that the Falcons turned it on, there were two consecutive throws to Julio, and it was just, where's this been all game?
It was just 15 yards a pop each time.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and then the Patriots got a field goal before the end of the first half to pull it within 21-3, and that ended up being pretty big, obviously.
I will say, actually, on I think it was the second of the Falcons' touchdowns, one of the Patriots players, I'm not remembering who, jumped the offensive line on the point after.
Oh, right. And then he got called for an illegal formation.
Right, but I'm pretty sure it was an incorrect call.
Yeah, it was the wrong call.
I'm almost positive it was the wrong call, which is interesting because no one thought it mattered at that point,
right.
But it could have made the difference in the end.
Yeah, funny.
Yeah, just like the missed extra point.
Yeah, I was considering the extra point.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I was just thinking about that going forward, but that reminded me of that because you can't touch the center before he gets into position.
Right, but he did.
But
he did clear him.
It was the tackle, not the center.
Right, right.
He jumped over the other guy, so it doesn't matter. Yeah. But anyway, sorry, continue.
No problem. So then beginning of the second half, a couple.
Wait, we're not going to talk about Gaga?
Do you want to talk about Gaga?
Do we have enough time?
Do you have strong opinions on Gaga?
It's iconic. What am I going to say? I mean,
is there anything you'll remember about that performance in 2 weeks?
Maybe the drones.
Yeah, the drones.
The drones were pretty cool.
Drones are pretty cool.
But I did see that her jumping off the roof was fake.
It was
disappointed.
It was pre-recorded.
It disappointed me.
Well, I mean, it makes sense because
if something
had gone wrong.
Yeah. Which means the drones were fake too, because that's what happened. Or pre-recorded too.
But
that means the whole game was pre-recorded.
Yeah, maybe it was all fixed. Yeah.
I know about it.
Storyline, too good to be true.
Yeah. So iconic. We can continue, though.
Okay.
Move on from Gaga.
So then a couple punts on the first two drives of the second half. But then the Falcons picked up another touchdown, another pretty good drive. 8 plays, 85 yards to bring it within 28-3 with about 8.5 minutes remaining in the third quarter. And this is where, because I, in the first half, I definitely noticed what Kevin said about Brady missing a lot of easy throws and such. And not easy throws, but throws that he usually makes. And I kept thinking, this game isn't over. Like, Brady's going to come back and the Patriots are going to get going. But at this point, I actually thought this game is over. And I think this was the first time all game that I, you know, actually, like, accepted the fact that the game was over. And I don't know.
Yeah, so I wasn't waiting on the comeback. That was about as bad a half as I've seen the Patriots play ever, that first half. And I think, you know, before the pick six, I was like, okay, we just need to get a score back, make it a one-possession game. After the pick, okay, this game's more or less over. You know, they flashed the stat, the biggest comeback ever in a Super Bowl was 10 points, and you're like, right. The Patriots are the Patriots, but still.
Yeah.
You know, Brady is Brady. Love him, but still. They go down. They score that last touchdown. So I would say from about the pick six to very, very late in this game, I was convinced that there was no chance at all the Patriots would win.
As a Jets fan, I've seen the Patriots do this so often, but I must admit, I mean, the Patriots, they're never out, but when they were up by 25 with 8.5 left in the third, I remember getting up and going to get some buffalo chicken dip because I thought that the rest of the game was going to be, you know, I thought Brady would put up some points, but the offense, I thought the Falcons offense would at least score another field goal or another touchdown
right.
within the rest of the game. So I thought it was pretty much over.
It got to, I think it was 28-3 with 2 minutes left in the third, which is just absurd that they came back that way. Pro Football Reference.com had Atlanta at a 99.9% win probability at 6 minutes.
Wow.
Which is just incredible.
Yeah.
That was actually, I think I saw this, that the first time that the Pats had played down, like, period, since, like, November.
It was the first time since week 11, week 10.
That's awesome. They've
been losing in a game at all.
Wow. They should win the Super Bowl based on that. That third quarter, though, again, like, it was just all Atlanta until that touchdown at the end there. There's not a lot to say about that quarter. I mean, that was probably the least eventful quarter of the game other than the first.
Yeah. Yeah.
The missed extra point could have really hurt them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. That's what I, because when they got the TD, you know, oh, okay, Brady's back. But then right. when they missed the extra point, you know, some of the mystique was gone. Some of the mojo was gone.
Yeah.
That was when I was still feeling pretty good.
I was feeling pretty deflated, to use a specific term.
Nice.
And after that mixed extra point, and then was this one or the next one, the attempt at the, it was the next touchdown that they attempted the onside kick, right?
Oh,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no,
it's crazy. You don't normally see a big comeback when someone misses an onside kick.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. You know, they kept, like, there were a couple, like, small mistakes they kept making, and the Falcons kept making some big plays,
mm-hmm.
right? Especially later, we'll talk about it.
Right.
But it didn't really, it kind of felt like they weren't quite doing enough.
Yeah, you have to score places. Off an onside kick.
Right, exactly.
It. Like,
right.
It's just inexcusable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the Patriots scored that touchdown, missed the extra point.
That's why they needed two at the end.
Yeah. Or was it this drive? Because this was the drive that the Falcons got into field goal range.
Was this when Ryan got stripped?
Yeah. No. Maybe that was the one. I don't know.
I'm trying to remember which drive that was.
Yeah.
I'll look it up.
So then the drive after the Patriots pulled within 28-9 was the Falcons got within field goal range. They were at the New England 32. And at that point, you're thinking, you know, fourth quarter, I mean, I thought the Falcons were going to nail a field goal and it was going to be, like, no chance of a comeback.
Right.
But there was a big holding penalty and then that, like, I think it was a 10-yard loss on a sack, which...
And then they fumbled?
No,
which sorry, the fumble was the next drive.
That was the next drive.
Yeah. Yeah, so that pushed the Falcons out of field goal range uh-huh. and they had to punt. Because of, I think it was like a 20 or 25 yard accumulated loss mm-hmm. between the penalty and the sack. And that was, I mean,
crazy.
Obviously in hindsight that was huge, but like in the moment it was huge too, because you know, if the Falcons hit that field goal, I don't know if there's a route for them to get back.
No, probably not.
Without a couple turnovers.
Right.
Yeah. And I will say it was after that first touchdown they kicked onside.
Okay. Okay. So that's why the Falcons were in such good, field position. Yeah, but that was a huge defensive stand.
Yeah. Another thing, other than the onside kick and actually the missed extra point, and that I think will get a lot of attention when we talk about Gustavsky playing today, mm-hmm. or playing on Sunday, sorry. It still feels so real, so present. but he, on a couple of the late kickoffs, he really pinned the Falcons very deep. I think he landed the ball on like the 3 and the 1 mm-hmm. when they were getting it. So, you know, You can't let it hit because who knows? You can't take a touchback. You got to run it out. And it left the Falcons on, I think it was like the 11 and the 12, starting a couple of those later drives, which was huge. They ended up, you know, getting pretty good field position anyway on at least one of them, but those starting positions were huge.
Yeah, the Falcons' defense just started looking tired. I think it was at this point when I could tell. Like, they stopped getting to the quarterback. There wasn't a lot of when they were, the safeties weren't coming over. There was just some weird stuff going on the Falcons' side of the field. And it was – it's because – and even though, like, the Falcons hadn't been – on defense that much during the game. Like, Falcons dominated offense, dominated time possession. It looked like, I hate to say this, but the Falcons defense was like under conditioned somehow. They weren't prepared to run against it.
I wouldn't say, so the Falcons didn't necessarily dominate time possession.
Didn't they?
No. Even in the first half, the Patriots were winning by a decent margin.
Really? Okay. Yeah. And that makes a lot more sense.
If you look at the numbers, the Patriots actually ran the most, the highest number of plays, offensive plays, ever in a Super Bowl.
Wow.
And the highest since, it was mid-90s in on another playoff game some team had run. They ran something like 93 or 94
I think they
plays.
Ran 86 and the Falcons ran 46 plays.
Right.
Which is an absurd.
So the disparity was ridiculous.
That's a crazy
disparity. You're right.
Even with the turnovers, too.
Right. Yeah. So you're right. I think the Falcons' defense was absolutely gassed.
Yeah, they must have been.
But I think we can be a little less harsh on them.
Yeah.
They're under condition
problems. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how many. I don't know how many teams of the league.
Well, I was gonna say it's funny because they normally took like during the regular season they took their defense out after the fourth quarter. They would put their subs in because they'd be up by so much.
Yeah.
And the Pats didn't do that. The Pats generally leave their guys in.
Right.
And so, that's one of the problems with having such an explosive offense is they're not in the field for very long.
Right.
Yeah. So then, after that defensive stand and the Falcons punt, the Patriots went on that unreal run. So they hit a field goal, and then they caused that. They had that strip sack on Matt Ryan, and they had really good field position. And then they scored the touchdown, and they hit the 2-point conversion off of that Ryan turnover to bring it within 28-20 with 6 minutes remaining. I mean, obviously that swung the game, but. You know, that fumble was huge, especially for a team like the Falcons that doesn't turn it over that much.
I think that that was when... Because it was what was so weird about the play was it was a 3rd and 1.
Mm-hmm.
And the Falcons were running the ball well.
Yeah.
So I remember seeing Ryan back up into the shotgun and just think, okay, sweep, get the first down. Yeah. And then they didn't hand it off. And then I was like, okay, short pass. And then the running back, I think it was Freeman.
He missed the block.
Freeman just didn't even try to block.
Try,
and when he got hit and Ryan fumbled, I was just like, I've seen this happen way too many times. The Patriots are coming back. This is going to be awful. That was the moment where even though they were still up by 16 points, I was just thinking to myself, I didn't want to say it. I didn't want to jinx it, but I just was thinking to myself, they're coming back. This is going to be awful.
That was a crazy play.
Yeah, that was just – that was the turning point. For
it
me.
Would have been so much karma if they called a tuck rule there. I was really rooting for it.
They changed the tuck rule.
They changed it. Yeah. So,
and we can all acknowledge it was interpreted correctly.
Sure. Except when he had both hands on the ball.
Interpreted correctly.
It's a fumble.
We'll continue.
Well, New England definitely got both hands on the ball at the end of that.
Yeah, I mean, it was clearly a fumble. That wasn't a
You know, and same thing. I had a slightly different emotional response.
It's just this horrible feeling of dread.
Did you throw any of your clean dishes?
No, I didn't. That was actually the whole thing, right? Their cleanliness. So I didn't want to
ruin that. You didn't want to disturb it.
Yeah, of course. No, but that was the same thing for me. Slightly different emotional reaction in terms of the polarity there. But I definitely thought that was the turning point. And that's when I kind of... I sat down close in front of the TV and was like, this might just happen.
Another little mistake. Like, they just keep adding up for the Falcons.
Yeah.
That was almost, like, that play call would almost be as egregious as Carroll running.
I think,
It affected the game in the same way.
I can't believe that they did that.
This is to me, when Tom Brady really appeared. Mm-hmm. Up until this point in the game, that drive before, too, but... Up until this point in the game, he'd been, you know, missing some throws. The receivers, to be fair to him, Edelman had a pretty important third down drop. A couple other guys had, like, some had drops or catches they probably should make.
Right.
At this point, they hit a rhythm. And
when they
hit a rhythm, I don't want to say it doesn't matter how many points they're down, because it obviously does. But, you know, basically anything is possible.
I think it doesn't matter what defense is on the field.
Right, that's definitely
just
true.
Just march down the field.
And also, really, the James White show.
He really came on.
He was incredible. And then you said for the 2-point conversion, you actually saw that coming.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was just something. They motioned White into the backfield, and I remember six years ago against the Jets, they did the same play in the AFC Divisional Playoff, and it's just a direct snap, and it's easier because you don't have to waste time handing the ball off. You just snap it right to the running back. That's just like that's a Patriots staple. Yeah. And then the last 2-point conversion, they did the quick pass, and it's just like the type of thing you can see coming, but you can't stop it. Right. That's what makes it so much worse.
Right. They pulled in Marcus Cannon from the outside, and he ran up the middle, and James White followed him right behind him.
I think Graham should be middle linebacker for the Falcons.
Oh, man, that was painful.
Yeah, you got to read that one, call it up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think up to this point, the Patriots offense, was kind of stagnant. Even in their earlier touchdown drive, I don't think they looked great. And I think that this was the run where they really got into their rhythm. You know, Brady was in his rhythm. Every time he dropped back, I was thinking he's going to complete this pass for like 15 yards at least. He was just right on. Mm-hmm. And then, so you're thinking, you know, Matt Ryan, MVP, with the ball back, 6 minutes remaining. I thought, still at this point, even though I was scared, I still had some hope for the Falcons because I trusted Matt Ryan. And the next drive, you know, a couple penalties, a few sacks. I think Ryan got sacked like 5 times on the day for 44 yards or something like that.
It was the yardage that was important. Yeah. He was getting sacked far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then the Falcons did nothing on that drive, ended up punting to the Patriots 9.
And was this the drive when he got sacked and then there was the holding penalty right? Oh, no, that was an
early. No, that was the one where they got pushed out of field goal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so this one was a 16-yard drive. I think there still were penalties.
There was an important penalty on this one, too.
Yeah.
There was an offensive holding penalty.
Oh, right, yeah.
So there were actually two offensive holding. There were two sack penalty combos on those late drives.
Yeah.
Because the one that I'm thinking of, I think, was the one that knocked them out of field goal range. But, so I'm going to come out, this might be a bit of a different take, but I'm going to defend the Falcons coaching staff. I actually like throwing the ball there because I think it's the Patriots, you have to keep your foot on the gas. And I remember on the first down, they ran a running play for a 1-yard loss. So it was 2nd and 11. I can defend the play called the pass. But Matt Ryan choked. You cannot take a sack in that scenario because the sack forces you out of field goal range. I think down the stretch, Matt Ryan really choked. And this is more on him than I think it is on any of the Falcons coaches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't think he's Matty Ice anymore.
I don't think so either.
Matty Water. Steam, even.
I don't know that I'd be that harsh, but yeah, he's got to get the ball out quicker.
Yeah.
There's no excuse for those two late sacks, especially. There's no excuse.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, a little bit of that's on the offensive line, too.
Yeah. And, you know, without knowing the play call and who the blocking assignments, it's hard to assign Williams.
And we've talked about Devontae Freeman's inability to block.
Right. No, that was. He looked so confused. He
didn't even try. That was the thing.
And Hightower runs past him, and he kind of just looks at Hightower.
Yeah, just kind of was like, oh, what are you doing here?
He was like, am I supposed to be doing something about this?
Roll Tide.
Yeah, I don't know.
Dante Hightower.
And I'll say Matty Ryan, I love him. Going back to his BC days, he's an Eagle. Almost won the Heisman Trophy up there, but this wasn't his best fourth quarter. No. I've seen better.
Yeah. No. And, you know, so then the Patriots got the ball at their own 9-yard line with about 3.5 minutes to play. And I think you knew when this drive started, it was going to be a touchdown.
They were going to score.
Like, there was no doubt in my mind at this point.
So there was the first play of the drive, I think. It was either the first or the second. Was a throw. And
their first two plays were incomplete passes.
Right. Their first two were incomplete passes. So they kind of sputtered.
Yeah.
And the first one, I think, Brady drops back, and he kind of gets hit. He throws, and it's maybe a 20-yard pass up the middle that's incomplete. It just kind of doesn't really go to anybody. But he got hit, but he was standing inside the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
And in my head, I was just screaming, "Do not call it a tetragravity,"
right.
Because I don't think it was. He got hit, so
it was past the description.
But that happened actually early on in the first game against the Giants, the first Super Bowl. And in my head, I was just. I was going nuts.
I had this moment where I had just this fantasy of them calling a safety. The game was going to be over, right. And I was so happy.
Right, that 2 points would have done it. And then they took a deep shot down the right sideline, which, you know, was close but didn't get it. And I'm thinking to myself, maybe not. You know, I thought this was destiny up until this point, but maybe not. And then Brady makes kind of like a falling down back shoulder, like 20-yard throw to his
that
right.
That was like an Aaron Rodgers
thing.
That
was ridiculous.
That was unreal. Yeah. If you give Tom Brady like one chance to do something, he's going to do it every time.
Yeah.
I think the near safety was the last time Atlanta's pass rush got close to Brady. Because after that, again, as a Jets fan, he just stands there in the pocket, no one touches him, and like every time he threw the ball, it
doing
was
that,
going
like,
someone
thing,
open.
And you can tell when he's
going
to throw if he starts hopping faster.
Yeah. And then late in the game, those last couple drives especially, they really targeted kind of the deep comeback routes on either sideline.
Atlanta was playing a little conservative.
Yeah, so Atlanta was playing with that one safety in the middle, and they were playing man otherwise, which left them open to the comeback routes, and they would just run. They did it with Malcolm Mitchell a few times. They did it with Amendola a few times. They would just run a guy down the sideline, have him turn around, and the ball would be waiting for him.
The biggest comeback route was the Edelman catch. Can we talk about that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That, to me, is a harder catch to make than Tyree.
I don't know, but
it's a harder catch to make.
I think that that was a lot of luck. And it was also
Tyree's catch.
I don't know. No, yeah. Tyree, you have to go up there and catch it and hold on.
If he wasn't wearing
I think
he
that.
It.
No, I actually. I don't think the Edelman. Like, it was a cool catch. I think it didn't. The Tyree catch came at a much more important time. It was a much bigger play. The Edelman catch was on 2nd and 10. If that thing falls incomplete, it's not that big a deal.
Yeah, no, but all I'm arguing is what's a harder catch. And I think with a guy, like, after getting smacked in the face, it bouncing off someone's leg and then making that catch.
His hands were right there. Like,
yeah, like,
I think he could grab it.
He couldn't see.
I'm so bad. No, but I think that...
I will say, in terms of, like, sheer importance, I think the Tyree catch was more important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because it was on 1st or 2nd down.
Yeah, no,
the
play
was
on 2nd.
Was on 2nd and 10.
Yeah, okay. They would have had a couple more shots at it.
No, I agree that Tyree's far more important.
But having said that... Yeah, I think every single person in America watched that catch and was like, there's no way he caught that, right? Because you saw Edelman, like, fighting forward on the ground, and a couple guys are wrestling, and he comes away with possession, and you think, there's no way.
Right.
Great call by the refs.
No, I have no
incredible idea. Yeah.
No, clap that up for the referee. I have no idea. But then you watch the replay, and it's just kind of bouncing around. You're like, all right, it hasn't hit the ground yet. And you just kind of, like, see, you can't see his eyes, but you can just see him go, oh, and he reaches out with both hands and just snatches it. And I think everybody in the country had the same moment of, oh, my God.
Right.
That's a catch.
I don't know. Chris Dunn and I looked at each other the moment that play was called and said, it hit his cleat. And we were both right.
It reminded me of that Darrell Revis catch where it was a couple years ago.
Oh, against the Chargers. Great play.
Where he basically was falling down with a dude on top of him and, like, kicked it to himself.
And landed in his
absolutely
hands.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was a great play.
And the obvious comparison that I was thinking of was the Jermaine Kearse Seahawks catch.
And also the Antonio Freeman on Monday Night Football from Red 5.
Yes.
But
we can
do
another podcast about
that. Yeah, we can do another. Yeah.
Other great catch in the fourth quarter.
Julio.
Yeah, oh, yeah. That one, Julio. You know, rest in peace, that catch, because it's.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's just.
It goes in with Rajay Davis's game tying home run.
Yeah.
The UNC, I forget the guy who hit the three at
the
end.
Marcus Page.
Yeah,
It just, that, I mean, it was such a great catch. We erupted when we saw the replay, so I got both feet down.
It's one of those that deserved to be the best moment of the game.
That was
play of the game.
Ryan, that was a great throw from Ryan, because I didn't know where he was throwing
it. I thought he was throwing it out of bounds.
Yeah, he might have.
Yeah,
he might have been doing that.
Forgot that Julio's 6'6 and jumped 40 feet in the air.
I saw Belichick get interviewed after the game, and he says, yeah, so I'm reaching for the challenge flag, because I'm thinking, like, there's no way he caught that. And we look up and we see the replay, and we're like, it's not even close.
Right.
Yeah, his feet, 2 feet in bounds. How did he do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was absurd. And, you know, it's, I don't know. I don't like to compare the two, but, you know, the Edelman catch, that was just crazy, too.
I think the Julio Jones catch is like, in terms of athleticism and skill and
body
control,
cooler.
It's the better catch.
Yeah.
In terms of just pure, like, talent as a receiver, it's the better catch.
Yeah.
I think Edelman's is, like, the more spectacular catch. Is that iconic?
I think so.
Julio Grant's so great.
Because that was the moment we were just like, okay, the Patriots have the mojo, they have all of the karma, they have the mystique on their side.
Right.
Yeah. Just the Falcons can't stop. Because that the
God
other
loves
thing.
The Patriots.
He must.
But Because I thought that the thing that was interesting about that play was it was not a good throw from Brady. Brady threw it, and the Falcons defender tipped it. It could have been an interception.
Was it double coverage?
It was in a double coverage.
It was, they had a guy underneath.
But Edelman
had
wasn't
a guy had, and they had a safety coming in.
Uh-huh. Was Edelman the intended receiver?
Edelman was the intended
receiver. He was blanking direct. There was nowhere to throw for Brady.
So the guy, the linebacker underneath.
Right side, right?
It was a seam.
Yeah.
Okay. And the linebacker underneath just puts up his left hand. And if he had gotten his other hand up, he probably could have caught it. But he just kind of hits it up in the air. And you're just watching thinking, which one of those four guys is going to pick up the ball?
Yep.
And then Edelman comes out of nowhere.
It's like the classic Tom Brady interception where it just gets batted super high in the air and someone gets it.
Yeah, for sure.
But then, you know, to no one's surprise, the Patriots converted that drive, scored the touchdown. The last shred of hope for Falcons fans and Patriot haters was the two-point conversion, but they converted that easily as well. So then we head to overtime.
Can I say, that is how you do a two-point conversion.
Yeah.
that's by the book, use the rules, we don't need screens, we don't need anything. That was a clean football game. That was a great two-point conversion.
Is this coming from anything?
Dabo Sweeney, if you're listening.
So then, you know, into overtime, the Patriots won the toss.
They should have got George W. back out, or George.
That would have been great.
He needed, like, it's not a valid toss if he's not back out there.
Yeah. And, you know, the Patriots then, 8-play, 75-yard drive, touchdown, game over.
There was no moment on that drive
when the Patriots won the toss. I absolutely knew, with no doubt, it was over.
Yeah, my biggest moment of celebration came with the coin toss.
Right,
I was pretty confident the game was over at that point. With how tired the Falcons defense obviously was, with how demoralized they obviously were.
Yeah, they had no momentum.
They had
how about the last possession for the Falcons before time expired? Poorly.
Oh
run
yeah,
this
like the yeah.
I know
it,
what
the
were they doing?
Like,
what were they trying to
all
do?
All of that. Also the fake knee.
That was unreal.
That was funny.
That was also from Baruski.
It's actually illegal.
No, I don't think they ended up actually faking the knee. I think they were just in the formation, and then they direct snapped it to one.
Brady gave it to the fullback, and then Brady runs around.
It looked like he was like turning around.
If they run that in for a touchdown, I don't know what I would have done. I would have jumped out if Dude didn't tweak his ankle.
Yeah,
although I will say, I hope Deion Lewis is okay, but that was the weirdest fall ever.
Right?
Yeah.
Because he just kind of like he just stopped and like his whole body just twisted.
It looked like he realized he was playing for the enemy and decided to sacrifice himself.
Oh, like this is too mean. We have to go to overtime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hit a sudden moral crisis.
Yeah. And then, you know, obviously, Patriots won the game 34-28 on that late drive. No doubt throughout the whole drive. I mean, it was a pretty clean cut drive. I don't think anyone
not getting pass rush on Brady, it's all over.
Right. Yeah. So now I just want to talk about the NFL overtime rule for a couple minutes because I think this is the thing that is going to get the NFL to change this rule.
Yeah.
So the rule right now is that each team must have an opportunity to possess the ball one time unless the first team scores a touchdown. And that's what happened. And, you know,
that's basically the electoral college of football.
Honestly, though, even if you give the Falcons a drive, the Patriots still win that game. But it's... I think the fact that we don't know is the problem.
Yeah.
I think we can agree that the Patriots by that point probably would have won the game.
Yeah.
And it's an imperfect rule. Right. I think we can all agree that like the Patriots
probably would have deserved the win,
yeah. But it's a stupid rule.
Yeah.
It's not the best way of deciding a game.
Yeah, definitely.
Far from it.
College has it right in my opinion. I think just make it so you can match each other at all points.
Yeah. I think just guarantee both teams one possession of the first team. I think that's perfectly
that's a lot more
reasonable.
Realistic too.
Yeah.
So if
the Patriots score a touchdown, the Falcons get one drive to score a touchdown. If they don't, the game's over. And if they do, then it's sudden death.
But what happens next year when it's Patriots-Packers and the Pats score on the first drive, Rodgers scores on the second drive, and then the Pats score on the next drive, and
then the game's over. Yeah.
Then you got to change it again, right?
Well, I don't know because... What annoyed me about the old overtime was everything depended on the coin toss.
Right, yeah.
And the change, I mean, it's like a half measure to try to address that.
Yeah.
But I think the way to fix overtime, guarantee both teams one possession.
Yeah.
I think that's the fairest way
to
do
it. At least to start.
Yeah. So since they changed the rules to this to where if the first team scores a field goal, the other team gets the ball. The winner of the coin toss has won, I think it's like 55% of the time. So it's not as much as you would expect, but I think despite that, this is the kind of game that will make them consider another option.
What was the old rule? Like, what was the percentage?
The old rule was just that.
Well, no, I know what the old rule was. What was the percentage?
I have no idea. It's certainly higher. I didn't look that up.
And I'll say, you know, you can say that during the regular season, maybe it's a little bit unreasonable to play, you know, another hour or whatever, how long it would take. But I think for the Super Bowl and probably the playoffs in general, it's worth making a rule change.
Yeah,
kind of like with what hockey does.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One thing I unearthed while I was researching this part was in 2005, these two brothers, they were engineers, the Quanbeck brothers, pitched the league on a proposal that I thought was awesome. It is sudden death, and what they called it was the cut-and-choose system. And so the coin toss went, and the loser of the toss decides where the opening possession of overtime would start. So they would say, you know, for example, the offense is 15-yard line. So, you know, 15 or 75, 85 yards from the end zone you're trying to score at. And then the winner of the coin toss would choose whether it wanted the ball at that point or if it wanted to start on defense. And I thought that was really fascinating.
And it would, so then it would be the first team to score a touchdown wins?
Yeah, it's still sudden death.
So the rest of the rules are the same?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would think that would be incredible. It sounds interesting. I think it would be incredible just to see how Belichick would handle it.
Yeah.
Just to see what he would think up.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the man's a football savant, so
exactly.
It would just be interesting to see what he comes up with.
It allows for a lot more, I think, manipulation by the coaches.
I don't know. I feel like they would still choose like the 20.
Yeah.
So I feel like it would be.
What do you choose? What do you choose if you're?
I think you go with the 20.
So why?
25.
Why would you?
Why?
Well, because then the other team can choose whether or not. So like, if you're gonna choose like anything more than the 20, the other team can just be like, okay, we'll take the ball, and then you give them a shorter field.
I think the ball on the 20.
But then
I think that the other team takes the ball.
You're playing.
Yeah,
I think every coach would go in saying, if we go to OT, we're going to give them this many yards and see what they do.
Yeah, the example that they gave in the article, this was a New York Times article I found this on, was that if you lose the coin toss and you want the ball, you say, like, the 7. So then...
So then they have to give you the ball.
You know, either they have like a 93-yard drive, or they say, here, you...
The Pats probably take
the Pats probably do that.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
I found this stat.
I think I would pick like...
Okay.
60%.
So
the old rule, 60% of the teams that won the coin toss won the game, which seems actually low, but...
Yeah.
That's...
Yeah.
Still not ideal.
Yeah, still not ideal. But yeah, a team like the Patriots, a team with like an incredible quarterback would probably still take the ball.
Yeah,
like on the 1 yard line.
Yeah, like,
Brady.
We get more safeties ending games, which I love.
Yeah. True.
Actually, I would choose the 1 yard line every time.
Yeah, that's true.
That would get a safety.
Yeah. Because if you get a safety, you don't get another possession. It's just the other team's ball.
Yeah, turnover and points.
Game winning. Yeah, I take it back. This could be a cool system.
Yeah, it would be.
We've converted Grubb.
Yeah.
You play your power as EIC.
You're playing like the Rams. You set him up at like the 40.
You're like, just take it on R15.
Yeah.
You need some help.
Yeah. But I don't know. I guess congratulations to Huggard on the victory. As painful as that is to say.
I respect that you said it, though. Thank you.
I felt like I had to.
This one, I don't know if it was the best, but it was the most unlikely.
Yeah, I think so. You had like a 0.01% chance at one.
Ridiculous.
Point.
Yeah.
But
do we have favorites for next year? Can we talk about that?
I don't know. I saw
again?
Today that the Pats are the favorites.
Really?
I
mean,
why wouldn't they be at this point?
A 40-year-old quarterback has never won more than one playoff.
Pending Brady's, you know, health.
So what would you say the chances of them winning are?
I'm still upwards of like 30%.
I say this every year, but it's got to run out. Like,
yeah.
He has to stop. When, like, this was such an epic game. I don't see how they could top this.
Yeah.
I think that the one thing that will get the Patriots back in the playoffs is the fact that the AFC East is horrendous.
Yes, true. Agreed.
Thank you.
Yeah, it is, like, objectively. But I can't see them winning another.
But
I say this every time.
I'm going to feel so old when the Patriots, Spurs, and Alabama are all terrible again.
Yeah, that next cycle will hurt.
Yeah, whoever takes over.
You know, the Patriots have another extremely good-looking and very talented quarterback waiting extremely right behind good-looking
in two ways.
don't sleep on Jimmy.
Yeah.
Don't sleep on Jimmy.
It's just not fair.
Sleep
it's
with
just,
Jimmy.
Yeah. But
hey, dynasties collapse in a big way, I think that something's coming down the road. Mark my words. Maybe not next year, but this dynasty will.
You never know.
According I say this Colin as a Yankees
Coward,
fan.
According to Colin Cowher, we know Tom Brady has a job for next year. He played for it and he didn't.
All right.
So let's not get started.
So let's pick two other teams who you think you would see making a run.
You got to say the Cowboys.
Cowboys
have the potential. Cowboys.
I feel like the Falcons might get that, like, lose the Super Bowl curse. They're, yes. like, up for it.
I see them regressing.
I would see the Falcons regressing, too, which is why I wanted to give you two just to make sure we had one that wasn't the
Packers, maybe?
Packers. Yeah. I mean,
the problem is, I don't know who else from the AFC.
Who's your Falcons from this year, though?
What do you mean?
Who's your Falcons? Like, who the Falcons were?
The Steelers.
The Steelers?
Yeah. I don't know. Ben worries me.
Yeah, me too. I mean, in a lot of ways. But if we're going to see him come out, if we're going to see a team come out and just be a dominant offense, not out of nowhere, because the Falcons have been good, but, you know, just make a big jump, I would think the Steelers are the team.
I like the Raiders.
Mm. Okay.
That's my choice. Because I think if Derek Carr is healthy, they make a run. Because the problem with the AFC is after the Patriots, it's wide open. The Steelers can go anywhere from 8-8 to 14-2 and anywhere in between.
Yeah, I root for the Raiders.
The Raiders also have
I would.
Any team really, that's suffered under Al Davis for that long.
Yeah.
Fair.
And then, I don't know, those Jets, you know, I feel like they're asleep for next year. Start Christian Hackenberg.
Hey, the Eagles.
All of our problems are solved.
Carson Wentz.
Actually, though, the Chiefs. I think.
Oh, yeah. I think they need another quarterback besides Alex Smith, though. Yeah. Alex Smith just cannot win in the playoffs.
Yeah. I don't know. It'll definitely be interesting.
Maybe
we can trade
Jivvy for, like, four of their guys.
Jivvy's your god.
Four first-round
Eric
picks.
Berry and eight first-round picks.
Because Belichick would get that done.
For their first-round draft pick for the next decade.
Right. Throw in Jeremy Maclin.
You could have Romeo Crennel back, too.
D'Anthony Thomas.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
You know, if the Texans can figure out their quarterback situation, maybe. Yeah. Their defense is...
Their defense is real. They could be the next Broncos. Really,
and they didn't have Watt.
I mean, it's going to be fun when you get to see Connie and Watt together.
Yeah.
Yes. And Will Fork if he stays.
Yeah.
True.
But, I don't know. It'll be interesting.
It'll be a fun year, and I can't wait to see the... I can't wait to... I'll come back from my post-graduation life and do this podcast again with
when
the Patriots.
I will do it when the Patriots dynasty finally collapses, because it will. It has to.
We're all going
to
be in here 60 years old.
Yeah.
I tell you.
I can't believe Brady's still playing.
When they invented cyborg technology.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining me on this great podcast. I just want to give a plug for some of our social media. You can follow the Voices Sports section at GU Voice Sports. You can follow Halftime, the Sports and Leisure blog, at Halftime GU. You can follow The Voice generally at G-Town Voice, all on Twitter. You can also find our podcasts at The Voice Podcast Network on iTunes, Overcast, wherever you get your podcasts. I don't think we're on Google Play yet, unfortunately. If you're interested in any of the personal takes that were thrown around today, you can follow our personal Twitter handles. I am at Nick Gavio.
I am at Kevin Huggy.
I am at GLPiro22.
I am at Buckets_Sportsman.
Oh,
it hurts to say. I mean.
Yeah, you got to change that up.
Yeah, that's recorded for history.
Multiple times.
Yeah. All right.
No wonder I'm getting new followers.
Thank you, everyone.